Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith, amateur radio operator W0NX, featuring the September 2024 The Spectrum Monitor. We'll begin by finishing The Shortwave Listener by Fred Waterer, September on Shortwave. Hosted by Tony Pavic, it's a fun mix of music. Pop Shop Radio goes around the world to bring you great stuff from all over. We play a whole variety of pop music, such as records from the 1960s and 1970s that were played on top 40 radio stations, not only in North America, but also on offshore radio and stations like Radio Luxembourg. To make it fun, we also include stuff that didn't make the top 10 and even reach back into the 1930s to the 1950s to dig up great sounds at 45 and 78 RPM. We like to show that music doesn't have to be in English to be great. Stopping off in places like Sweden, Finland, the Czech and Slovak republics, Germany, France, Brazil, South Africa, Singapore, Japan, Australia, and New Zealand, we find cool records for you to groove to. We mix it all in the style of top 40 radio of the 1960s and 1970s with jingles in real records played by a real DJ. Give them a listen via WRMI at 0100 UTC Mondays on 5950 and 7730 kHz. Radio Exterior de España. The English language broadcast of Radio Exterior de España has been on the air since 1944. Our broadcasts seek to inform listeners around the world about goings-on in Spain, as well as offer a Spanish perspective on world events. Each broadcast features a news bulletin and generally a cultural feature. In recent days, features have included an award-winning comic book store in Madrid, the female perspective of the Prado Museum, illness in literature, and the recovery of the Iberian Lynx. From my days as a shortwave listener in 1978, Radio Exterior de España has been one of the easiest radio stations to hear. The English service disappeared for a while, but has been back for some time. It can be heard 3 times a week on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 2300 UTC, and Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday at 0300 UTC. Try on 15,390, 15,520, 17,715, and 17,855 kHz. Summertime medicine for your ears. In August, WRMI Shortwave Radio aired a 5-part series of readings in the old-time radio style of Elizabeth Gaskell's Mr. Harrison's Confessions. It was originally published as a 31-part series in 1851 in Ladies' Companion magazine, and in 1852 in Godey's Ladies' Book. It is a story of a young medical doctor who moves to a small English town as an assistant to a senior physician, who tries to show him the ropes socially. However, through rumor, tricks, and misinterpreted events, he finds himself a victim of the town's propensity for gossip that endangers his career. Yes, there are numerous comical characters, yet true romance is eventually found there too. For more information, please examine the website for the Elizabeth Gaskell Society, as she is also known for her novels, Wives and Daughters, Cranford, Mary Barton, and North and South. You can hear it on WRMI Saturdays at 9 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 1300 UTC, on 15,770 kHz, and at 11 p.m. UTC Sunday, 0300, on 9,395 kHz. The series will be repeated beginning Saturday, September 7th. WaveScan. WaveScan is the longest-running DX program of Adventist World Radio. It's hosted by Jeff White of WRMI and often Ray Robinson. It is quite an interesting program featuring radio news and history and reports from DX clubs around the world on a rotating basis. Jeff informs me that in the coming weeks, WaveScan will be presenting various reports from the NASB meeting, including my remarks and recordings of some of the other talks. It will also have some reports from the HFCC B24 conference in Uzbekistan. Furthermore, Jeff will have a report in the coming weeks about radio and historical radio sites in Newfoundland. Jeff and Thais White visited there after the NASB meeting and gathered some material about the Marconi site in St. John's, where the first transatlantic signal was received, the site in Newfoundland where the Titanic distress signals were monitored, and the site where the first transatlantic cable was terminated. Plus, there will be an interview with a director at the second oldest religious radio station in Canada. The tentative lineup for the program this month is as follows. September 1st, Island Hopping in the Pacific, Part 2. Eniwetok and Macon, Ray Robinson. Trends in Shortwave Programming, Fred Waterer at NASB 2024. Part 1, Japan DX Report. September 8th, Radio Carolyn Update from Ray Robinson. First report about the HFCC B24 Shortwave Frequency Coordination Conference in Tashkent, Uzbekistan. Interview with Daniel Robinson of Red Telecom, conference host. Philippines DX Report. We'll take a closer look at WaveScan next month. BBC programs for August and September. All programs are archived after broadcast, all times UTC. The Explanation. Consisting of 193 member states, the United Nations is a global organization which strives for peace, dignity, and equality on a healthy planet. Founded in 1945, it provides a forum for the world's nations to come together, discuss issues, and find solutions which transcend national boundaries. The UN has successfully ended conflicts across the world and has won the Nobel Peace Prize over 10 times. However, it has been criticized for the alleged abuse of power by nations, inaction, and failure to prevent armed conflicts. So, in a rapidly changing world, is the UN fit for purpose? Host Claire Graham talks to the BBC North America and UN correspondent Nada Tawfik about the structure, purpose, and future of the United Nations. BBC World Service, Sunday, August 18th at 11:30 UTC. Elvis Costello at the BBC. Radio 2 celebrates the 70th birthday of Elvis Costello, which is on August 25th, with this special program. From his early days writing songs, getting arrested for busking outside a record company conference, and signing to the very cool Stiff Records, to his acclaimed collaborations with Sir Paul McCartney, the Brodsky Quartet, and Burt Bacharach, this is the story of Declan McManus, known to the world as Elvis Costello. He learned his craft from the early records of famous chart artists that his father brought home to learn for his dance band concerts, and then conquered the world with a new wave of extraordinary British music and his personal take on classic genres. Listeners will hear how Elvis, who never wanted to be a pop star, completed what he regards as his first real record, Watching the Detectives, while auditioning band members for The Attractions. We will also learn how the Detroit Spinners inspired his ballad, Allison, and his reasons for recording an album of country ballads, which was released in 1981. We discover that Radio Radio really isn't a tribute to the airwaves, and hear firsthand about his determination to get jazz legend Chet Baker to play trumpet on the modern protest anthem, Shipbuilding. This is all told through Elvis's BBC interviews with Andy Peebles, Peter Curran, John Tobler, Annie Nightingale, Mariella Fostrup, Janice Long, Matt Everett, Roger Scott, and Tom Robinson. BBC Radio 2, Saturday, August 24th at 0100 UTC. The documentary, The Next Paralympians. The trailblazing sports stars with a learning disability and the barriers they face. Presented by Dan Pepper, a British ex-Paralympic swimmer who has a learning disability, The Next Paralympians tells the story of pioneering athletes who are the first to represent their country at the Paralympics in the intellectual impairment class. Deepthi Jivani grew up in a rural Indian village where she was bullied and mocked for being different. In Paris this summer, she will become India's first ever Paralympian with an intellectual impairment. After winning 400 meters gold at this year's World Para Championships, she may also come home with a medal. What took India, the world's most populous country, so long to have a Paralympian with an intellectual disability? Why do fewer than a quarter of the countries competing in the Paralympics send athletes with an intellectual impairment? And what have the trailblazers and their teams done to buck the trend in their country? Dan Pepper was the presenter of the World Services award-winning series The Fake Paralympians, in which he investigated the cheating scandal at the 2000 Paralympics that shocked the world and how it led to a ban on athletes like him from the Paralympic Games, ruining his sporting career. BBC World Service, Saturday, August 24th at 1200 UTC. Witness History. Amateur radio enthusiast Maggie Iaquinto became the first person to contact Russian cosmonauts on the space station from her home in Australia in 1990. She had to know the correct frequency, when the space station would be coming over her house, and she tried for a year before making the first contact. After the dissolution of the Soviet Union, Maggie also relayed crucial information and read out news reports to cosmonaut Sergei Krikalev, who was left stranded in space, while politics was being sorted on Earth. Megan Jones listens to Maggie's radio recordings and speaks to her son Ben Iaquinto. BBC World Service, Friday, August 30th at 0850 UTC. Heart and Soul. 20 years ago, reporter Julia Paul was teaching media to young women in an Afghanistan where the Taliban were in retreat, if only temporarily. Now she's tracked down some of them again to find out how their lives have fared in the decades since. Some have fled abroad, while others are still in Afghanistan, imprisoned in their homes. But even for those who've escaped, life is far from easy, as one of the army of secular Western aid workers that flooded Afghan society all those years ago, Julia discusses with the women whether or not the West should have intervened in the first place. BBC World Service, Friday, August 30th at 1330 UTC. And now Radio 101 by Ken Reitz, KS4ZR. KS4ZR numeral 1 at gmail.com. OTATV antenna woes, following hurricanes on Roku. Some 5 or 6 years ago, in my never-ending quest for better over-the-air OTA TV reception, I bought a Winnegard HD8200U TV antenna, the biggest model the company makes, a combination VHF-UHF antenna at a cost of around $200 without a preamp. It worked well for several years until a nearby lightning strike took out the preamp. Not to worry, I bought a replacement and mounted it on the antenna. But there was another problem, no signals. Careful examination of the preamp found that it was fine. The problem was with the antenna's built-in balun. This antenna is a complicated design that features two types of antennas on one boom. The VHF portion covers 54 to 108 MHz FM band and 174 to 216 MHz, channels 7 to 13, using a 7-element log periodic array. The UHF portion is a corner-fed Yagi covering 470 to 608 MHz, channels 14 to 36, with a great number of director elements out ahead of the driven element, which is backed by corner reflector elements. It weighs in at over 15 pounds, with the biggest VHF element 9 feet long, and the entire antenna boom 14 feet long. As designed, both the VHF and UHF antennas are electrically connected in a single box that is riveted to the boom and contains a circuit board for the balun that feeds a single 75-ohm coax fitting for both antennas. Power to the preamp goes from the power inserter T, which injects low-voltage DC power into the coax, that is sent to the mast-mounted preamp. The problem was that it was the balun circuit board that was fried. No signals could be sent to the TV. A bigger problem was that, after prying the plastic housing off the antenna where the VHF and UHF antennas connect, I found that the coax fitting was epoxied in place, and no replacement from Winnegard for the proprietary circuit board was offered by the company. There was no way to do a repair. The entire antenna went into the antenna graveyard in the woods, where it was kicked around for the next 12 months and suffered various injuries, none of them major. As it happens, a year ago, I bought a small VHF-UHF antenna from Antennas Direct called The Element, $70 with free ground shipping. Covering 174 to 608 MHz, that I wanted to test as a scanner antenna. To make the antenna most useful as a scanner antenna, I reworked the mount so that the antenna could be mounted in a vertical position, favored by public service transmitting antennas. It worked great. Later, I mounted the antenna horizontally on the old rotator-driven mast in place of the non-functioning TV antenna vacationing in the nearby woods. Adding a preamp, the antenna's direct element, which was one quarter the size of the Winnegard antenna, worked relatively okay until this past June, when lightning found its way into that preamp. It happened that at this time, the 2024 Paris Olympics were in progress with wall-to-wall coverage on NBC. I had nothing. It was time to drag the old antenna out of the woods and put it back in service. But that would require a do-it-yourself balun that could work with a new preamplifier. First, some TV preamp gotchas. After dragging the antenna out of the woods, it was time to shop for a preamp replacement. Better preamps, like the one that had worked well for years and rated at 30 dB gain, were in the $100 range, with 18 dB gain preamps selling for about half that, but quickly getting up to $70 with tax and shipping added. More annoying was that the better preamps, which I would have happily bought, had non-switchable FM traps, designed not to pass those frequencies in the FM band, a non-starter for me. Both Winnegard's Boost XT Pro $100 preamp and Channel Master's Preamp 1 $85 clearly state they will not pass FM frequencies, though confusingly, the specs on the Preamp 1 just as clearly show 54 to 88 MHz, 174 to 260 MHz, 470 to 608 MHz. You might wonder why anyone would want to block FM frequencies, but you wouldn't ask if you lived near an FM broadcast tower. Those signals can interfere with reception of TV signals, especially ATSC 1.0, and no doubt ATSC 3.0 digital TV transmissions, if you're lucky enough to have any. Years ago, I found a great preamp with a switchable FM trap, but the switch was inaccessible unless the preamp was taken apart. I found that Amazon is awash in cheap preamps of questionable use, many with 25% 1- and 2-star reviews. This is not a place for bargain hunting. So, it was back to Winnegard for their 18dB Boost XT model at $51 plus shipping and handling. Amazon sells the same model for Winnegard at the same price. The difference is that shipping will be free for Amazon Prime customers, and it will arrive much earlier than ordering directly through Winnegard's website. Remember that these preamps won't work with TV antennas that have built-in preamps. Not all tuners are alike. Once I had the refurbished HD8200U in place, I pointed the antenna at Richmond, where the Sony TV found 43 channels. I disconnected the antenna from the TV and plugged it into the Zinwell ATSC 3.0 adapter and did a rescan. It found 38 channels. The Sony TV found 6 LPTV channels that the Zinwell missed. But the Zinwell found 6 ATSC 3.0 next-gen channels, where the Sony TV found only 1. While the Zinwell recognized the next-gen channels, the signals were too weak to display. Yet, the Sony locked onto 1 ATSC 3.0 channel with excellent reception. It's a peculiarity I'm at a loss to explain, but it does show that reception of next-gen channels will require far more in the way of antennas, signal boosters, rotators, and outdoor masts than most people, particularly those in fringe reception areas, will be willing to pay for. And that is a shortcoming of the ATSC 3.0 system. Like HD radio, it's great if you live in an urban or suburban area, not so great if you live further away from terrestrial FM and TV transmitters. I'll have more on this at a later date. Cord-cutting hurricane watch on Roku TV. I've always lived in places that have extreme weather. Hurricanes, blizzards, tornadoes, floods, ice storms. Not all the time, and thankfully, not in the same season. So, I've always needed to be able to keep up with weather forecasting. One of the great contributions to weather watching was the Weather Channel, TWC, an Atlanta-based cable TV channel launched in 1982, which was also available on C-band satellite TV from the early 1980s. I always wondered why there wasn't a rival to TWC. This is a pretty big country. Surely there's room for one more TV channel specializing in weather. Eventually there was Weather Nation, first on the air in 2011. Colorado-based Weather Nation sought a niche among terrestrial TV stations, typically airing on digital subbands, which means the video will never be better than 480 or 720 resolution. Even so, it was good to have up-to-the-minute forecasting for the whole country, and at least a rudimentary explanation for weather events. But Weather Nation has had trouble gaining traction on over-the-air OTA TV. For many years, our local Charlottesville Channel 29 offered Weather Nation on a sub-channel and provided 24/7 radar coverage in an on-screen insert box. We'll continue this article next time. Thank you for joining us for Hobby Radio, read by Keith.